Kia ora whānau, welcome back to Two Tipsy Plants podcast, where we talk plants and drink booze. My name is Sasha.
And my name is Sasha.
And in today's episode, we will be talking about plants in mythology, in legends, in literature, but at the same time, we will be busting some of the
misconceptions
and some of the myths about the plants. But most important things first things first, Sasha, tell us what we are having today as a drink.
Yes, I'm very parched, so I can't wait anymore. We have Esk Valley, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Malbec blend from 2021. That's from Gimlet Gravels, Hawke's Bay, New Zealand. Circling back into the topic of the previous episode, Hawke's Bay have been hit by the Hurricane Gabriel, and it is important to support smaller businesses that have been affected by that. That's why for the past couple of months I've been only drinking Hawke's Bay wines.
Well, I can't say that it's a bad choice, because, you know, Hawke's Bay wines are good. The event that happened
is very unfortunate, but
it sort of made you try to explore Hawke's Bay wines.
Wider range of Hawke's Bay wines, yeah. Yes.
All right. We need to get cork wines as well, just so we can have that sound.
Well, the thing is that New Zealand wines are mostly screw cap.
Yeah.
Just because it's easier, cheaper, and yeah. To burst all the misconceptions, it doesn't mean that the wine is cheaper or worse.
Right.
Mm. All right. So because this wine is based primarily on Merlot grapes, we are expected to have notes of cherry, plum, chocolate, dry herbs, and vanilla. Merlot is loved for its boisterous black cherry flavors, supple tannins, and smoky or chocolatey finish. It's often found in Bordeaux blends and Cabernet Francs.
I can definitely smell cherries and chocolate, which I like. Well, to be honest, my go-to wine is always Merlot, not New Zealand Merlot per se, just because I feel like New Zealand has good Merlots as well, but I do prefer Australian Merlot, so that's my go-to wine, like if I don't feel like choosing or experimenting.
Hotter climates, more flavor to them.
All right, Sasha, tell us, what do you smell?
I do smell what you have mentioned, cherries, plums, a little bit of chocolate, but I also smell a little bit of herbiness to it. I would say something like thyme.
I don't smell it, but once you actually try it, it is very spicy.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
It is deeper than I expected.
Mm-hmm. And it's such
boysenberry, black cherries, vanilla.
I can definitely taste like ripe berries, but also the spiciness. Like I can't really smell the spiciness, but it smells very fruity. Low. Not fruity, but like deep.
Malt wine. That's what it tastes to me like.
Malt wine that's not even like prepared.
It's lovely.
No, great choice, Sasha. As usual. I always trust Sasha with picking wines.
I mean, it's not something fancy, but it's definitely not going to spoil your night.
Good wine does not have to be fancy. Like, that's, especially in New Zealand, when you can get a bottle of wine for anywhere from, like, what, 10 bucks to...
From 10 to eternity.
Eternity, yeah. But I feel like in the range of $10 to $25, you can actually find decent wine.
I do like to buy sometimes on an off night to buy the bottle of Clearskins, because it is essentially grapes.
It's a lottery.
It's a lottery. It's the grapes that didn't make into the mass production and now they're just bottled just because.
Mm.
And yeah, sometimes you can find some decent wines in there. Well, not decent, but like better than you expected. We'll keep on savoring it, but let's jump into the plants today.
Yeah, so would you like to start or would you like me to start?
My format is probably different from yours, so I'll start. And
yeah, maybe you go first and then we'll just go one by one maybe.
Yeah. Fair enough. So I will start with some houseplants.
Houseplants.
The houseplants, the first one is aloe vera.
Okay. Oh, are there like any stories about aloe vera?
According to Greek mythology, aloe vera was a gift from the gods given to Aristotle. Ah, sorry, not Aristotle himself, but Aristotle's pupil as a cure for wounds. However, some people believe that aloe vera can be used to treat all kinds of ailments. It is not. But it's quite great. Like, in real life, it is quite great for sunburns.
Oh, just any skin abrasions, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is mainly moisturizing. So that's...
It's moisturizing, but also it creates like a protective layer like when it dries over your skin. So it is good, like, if you have a cat to first desensitize it and then... Sorry.
Did you say desensitize it?
Yeah, but I said desensitize.
So just roll in dirt, just spit on it.
To sanitize it. And then, yeah, rub a bit of aloe vera on it. Yeah. Right. Interesting. So with aloe vera, do you know where the name is coming from? I'm just curious.
I've tried to look for the scientific name for aloe vera and it's just aloe vera.
Is there a description of where the name came from? Because what I've discovered with a few of my plants is that the name of the plant is actually based on, like, it is dedicated to a goddess, like a Greek goddess or something
like
that.
Well, that's why our formats are different, because I didn't ask for the name specification.
No, it's fine. I was just going through the book, and in the book they sort of had, you know, shit that's already written in there. Oh, interesting. So what are the misconceptions about the...
Misconception about the aloe vera? Hmm. Well, first of all, that it doesn't need to be watered. Just like every other plant, it needs to be watered quite regularly.
Yeah, just because it's a succulent.
Just because it's succulent doesn't mean it needs to die of dehydration. Mm. What probably people need to understand that because it's succulent, it just needs the well-drained soil. Or if you don't have that, just put it in a terracotta pot.
Mm. I think a lot of people also don't realize that succulents, they tend to store a lot of water. But obviously that storage does deplete. So you do need to add to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I have a camellia.
A what?
Camellia.
Camellias, all right.
Yeah, so most of my plants are obviously, not obviously, but they are outdoor plants. They do grow in New Zealand. I didn't really go into native plants because I feel like there is a lot of opportunity to cover that in the future topics, but also we did kind of touch on that as well. So I thought I'll talk about a camellia. So for people who don't know, camellias are usually evergreen shrubs that do have beautiful flowers on them. And they, well, some people think that they only grow in shade, but that's not true, but we'll get to that. So according to legend, camellias came into being when an Indian prince and mystic named Dharma...
Jeffrey Dharma?
No, the Indian Dharma, Indian prince.
Okay.
The personification of truth and justice traveled through China teaching philosophy. He became exhausted and weary from his prayer, fasting, and long travels in an unfamiliar territory. So one night, right, this dude decides to cut off his eyebrows.
Ooh, that's a predecessor of all the drag queens, I guess.
I just don't know how you'll be sitting there and you're like, I'm tired. Let me cut off my eyebrows because they're so heavy.
Well, I have seen a lot of people on TikTok who do that.
Anyway, yeah, he cuts off his eyebrows and just flungs them onto the ground. And then during the night, the eyebrows took root and grew into the first tea plant.
Yeah.
Why I'm talking about the tea plant is not a lot of people actually know that. Camellia, your black tea, green tea, white tea, and long teas, they are actually made out of a Camellia sinensis plant. It just depends on the fermentation that, it changes, and treatment, it changes the type of the tea, call it that way.
Oh, so it's similar to the wine grapes, I assume. If you take out the skins at some point, it will be rosé, for example. And if you don't, it will be a red wine.
Yeah, well, yeah, you can use the stems as well, or it's just the different treatment and different fermentation. So, yeah, apparently the first tea plant grew out of Dharma's eyebrows.
Did he cut it off with meat or without?
I don't know. That it doesn't really say that.
Yeah, just wondering how gory it is.
Yeah, apparently he found that infusions of decoction of its leaves promoted alertness, stimulated the mind, and enabled him to proceed in his teachings.
I guess nobody told him not to cut off his eyebrows.
You become wiser if you cut off your eyebrows, apparently.
Apparently.
Anyway, so some of the common misconceptions and some of the myth busting that I'm going to do is a lot of people think that camellias only flower in winter?
I have camellia just across the fence, and this bitch flowers all the time, and I hate this bloody bush because it just drops flowers throughout the year into my property. I decided to have a nice yard in the at the backyard, and it's supposed to be like clean, whereas now I have dead flowers all over my black bark. Ah!
I like camellias. But anyway, a lot of people think that they only flower in winter, and Exhibit A, it's not true. So Japanese camellias, they usually do flower in sort of late, well, midwinter to mid-spring. And Japanese ones are the ones that have glossier leaf and much larger flowers. But then if you talk about Sasanqua camellias, which are the smaller ones, they do flower now, autumn, which we are in autumn in New Zealand now, and they flower through autumn to winter. But then there is also a hybridized camellia, Camellia williamsii, that kind of flowers. It has the longest flowering season, so it flowers from now-ish until the early spring, but also apparently it's the hardiest one of all of them. So yeah.
That was interesting. Thank you, Sasha, for this educative moment. So, the next plant on our list is snake plant.
Yeah.
In Chinese mythology, the snake plant is known for its ability to ward off evil spirits and bad luck.
It looks evil to me itself. Like, why would you? Because it doesn't look angelic to actually, you know, ward off all the evil spirits and stuff.
I mean, it's also called mother-in-law tongue, so it definitely should not be warding off evil spirits.
Yep.
More like attracting the evil spirits. Yeah, some people believe that snake plants are poisonous. It's not true. They are quite safe for pests. Sure. They are quite safe for pets and humans. Misconceptions with this plant usually stand around the lighting situation. Like, yes, it is great to be used in the lesser light areas, but it doesn't mean that it needs to be there or must be in the less light locations, like no light or whatever. It's going to die. Just like every other plant, it prefers bright areas.
Well,
in a while, it grows under direct sunlight.
Yeah, it is. It is a hardy plant, so I would say that it doesn't mind a lot of different conditions. But then I have watched a video from Aesop Science actually, and they did a like a test on house plants, and they tested which house plant survives the longest without water and sunlight. They just put like a bunch of plants
in a bathroom, which is like without windows. I've seen that.
Yeah, and the last one standing after like 90 plus days, so it was about 3 months plus, was the snake plant. Mm.
One of the YouTubers that I've watched, she have ordered a big batch of Queen Anthurium, which is humongous. And because of all the postage issues and COVID and everything, the plant was in a box for 3 months.
And did it survive?
Out of the batch of 90 plants, which is bloody expensive, I think 3 of them survived. Well, survived is barely, but she was able to resurrect, like bring them to actually the proper... Cue in angelic music.
Yep. Oh, that's cool. Okay. Well, yeah, I wouldn't say that it's like looking at the snake plant, I'm just looking at one right now. I wouldn't say that it's an angelic plant. And also, yeah, as you said, it is a mother-in-law tongue. And yeah. But interesting. Yeah, I didn't know.
Against everybody's mothers-in-law. But yeah, it's a common misconception that they are evil.
Misconception or...
Or we shall see. Let's move on.
Okay. The next one on my list is the most typical plant you can talk about. A rose.
A rose.
Yeah, so what do you think of roses? Do you like them?
Which one are you talking about? Like patio rose, tea rose,
garden just rose? Just rosa species in general.
Just rosa species.
Yeah, so, you know, your garden roses and...
I like roses. I like how they smell. I don't like the thorny ones. I like that they're quite versatile. You can have a creeping roses. You can have vining roses and bush.
Mm.
You can do whatever you like with them.
Hmm. I feel a bit indifferent about roses. I know that, you know, a lot of people gift them to other people as, I don't know, a sign of love. You know, 101 roses is eternal love and stuff. I don't get it. Like, I feel like there are so many more nicer plants than just a rose.
I just don't like cut flowers as a present to begin with.
Yeah, but there are over 300 species and a tin of thousands of cultivars of roses.
Well, shit. Good luck finding your favorite wine if you have seen one in a botanic garden.
So the name Rosa is a classical Latin name for the plant, and it literally translates as red, sort of the common color of the plant. According to one myth, the term sub rosa, which suggests strict confidence or private conversation, originated when Cupid used a rose to bribe Harpocrates, the god of silence, into keeping quiet about Aphrodite's various love affairs. He's usually like depicted with holding one white rose and sort of covering his mouth with the other hand. So that's where like the roses are. You know how sometimes you have a dining table and then you have like a rosette above the table? So in ancient Rome, that used to be the sign that whatever happens at this table must stay at this table. So you can't, you know, spread the word.
Whatever happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yep. but also Aphrodite, the Greek goddess of love and beauty, Venus to the Romans was the source of the red rose. So when she pricked herself with a thorn of a white rose, the blood from her finger dripped onto the petals and stained them forever. But also other legends claim that the red petals resulted when Cupid spilled red wine on the petals of the white rose. I kind of like that theory more.
So basically they both get drunk and one of them spilled blood and another one spilled wine.
Sounds like our teenage years, doesn't it?
yeah, flashback into Sasha falling onto the glass.
Yep, and having like a glass in my leg, and then it was New Year's, and the scar on my leg looked like a Christmas tree. It's still somewhere on my leg. Some common misconceptions about roses, and that's a very common one, that all roses smell, because they don't. All the roses smell. And also different roses smell different. There is tea rose, there is like I can't remember all the different types of roses, but like my favorite one to smell is the blue moon, rose blue moon. It's like this blue purple.
Yeah, I think
purple.
You had it once.
I had it before, yeah, and it just has this nice fragrance. But otherwise, yeah, not all roses smell. And there is another misconception that yellow roses are the most fragrant one, which is a complete bullshit as well, because I had beautiful yellow rose bush in my previous garden, and it just didn't smell at all.
Well, we can't really trust you because sometimes you can't smell things.
Oh my God. We went to fragrance shops with diarrhea recently. I cannot smell half the perfumes. I don't know if it's post-COVID thing, but like a lot of, I think because we went smelling stuff with you as well.
It can be a genetic thing just because some of the plants are not picked up by people with different genetics,
well,
like
Baronia. Yeah. But it's not just that. It's also like, you know, the candle smells and stuff. I wonder if it's like a long COVID thing, but I found a perfume that I can smell and that I like and that is quite intoxicating. So yeah. Anyway, derailing here. So yeah, that's about the roses.
My spills are a little bit shorter than yours at the moment, but it will change soon.
It's okay.
At the moment, we are covering jade plant. The jade plant is a Crassula ovata, which is the money plant.
Okay. Yep, that's what I wanted to confirm. Yes. Which jade plant?
Yes. In Chinese culture, jade plant is considered a symbol of prosperity and good sunlight. I'm sorry, what? My gosh, I'm... good sunlight. What is the good sunlight? Whatever all the plants want is a good sunlight.
It's the symbol of good sunlight.
It's the symbol of a good luck. However, some people believe that they need very little water and can survive without sunlight, which is not true. Jade plants still need proper care and proper soil and proper sunlight and proper water.
What I found as well is our family friend, he has a bonsai, a jade tree bonsai. Mm. And what I found once is when we were visiting his place, his jade plant was just infested with thrip in the house.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think maybe because it's so juicy, thrip just loves it. Yep. And don't be dropping shit around, Sasha. The vine is pouring. The vine is divine. How much did you pour for yourself? That was
enough.
That was a long pour.
No judgment in this household.
Okay. Is that the jade plant?
This is the jade plant. I told you my house plant lists are quite short.
No, it's okay. It's okay. I'm sort of touching on a few plants that we've already talked about the last time. Rhododendrons.
Ooh, yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah, because I like the way the rhododendrons look, but you don't like them.
I don't like it. I mean, I think it's just tainted because it always ends up with thrips.
It depends on the variety, but yeah, but also it depends on where it grows and stuff. Yeah, I don't like the maintenance of it, I agree, but there are some rhododendrons that are like super fragrant that I love.
Never seen one.
I am having like a major brain fart today. There are two rhododendrons, white flowering rhododendrons that I know of that I've actually smelled myself and they smell lovely. Princess Alice, that's one. And the other one is John something.
Travolta.
If you want to smell John Travolta. Yeah, so I've also found out like a random fact that apparently Australia has one rhododendron that is native to Australia. I did not know that.
Surprising.
Yeah.
I thought rhododendrons are Tibetan, Chinese.
Well, most of them are from like some of them are from North America. They are from Asia, a bit of Europe and Australia.
Oh, so they are widespread.
Yeah,
they're
quite
to
widespread.
Know.
Yeah. So the name rhododendron is from rhodos, the rose, and dendron, the tree. So obviously it kind of translates to tree rose. Yeah. The common name for azalea, which are the same, a part of rhododendron family, and they're actually reclassified as rhododendrons now, is the Greek.
That's going to be so fucking confusing.
Yeah. Well, they you can still differentiate them, I guess. But yeah, azaleas and rhododendrons are both rhododendrons. Anyway, the name azalea is from the Greek azaleos, which means a dry, because they like dry soil, which I... let's agree to disagree.
Let's agree that they like acidic soils.
Apparently, in the language of flowers, the rhododendron means danger. I see why, because they're poisonous as hell. But then azaleas suggest temperance. Like...
Well, because they're always petite and dainty.
So there is like a myth about Greek soldiers from 401 BCE, but it kind of relates back to that episode where we talked about poisonous plants. I don't know if you remember, but I told you that the honey collected by bees from rhododendron can actually be poisonous. This story is about that. So Greek soldiers and essayist Xenophon narrated a history of a force of 10,000 Greek soldiers, of which he was a part, led by Cyrus in 401 BC against his brother, the king of Persia.
Was it Miley Cyrus?
Yes.
I can buy myself flowers.
And she came in like a wrecking ball, yes. So the story is about the soldiers being temporarily stupefied after eating honey that bees have collected from wild rhododendron. It is the same rhododendron as they've presumed to be used in the Sherlock Holmes series when he sort of staged his own death. But yeah, I found it quite fascinating. So common misconceptions are rhododendrons don't like water. As, you know, I've mentioned earlier, they're that azaleas, like they like dry and stuff. So similar to your spill about
succulent
plants, yeah, they do like well-drained soil. And because rhododendrons have shallow roots, the roots sort of spread sideways rather than going deep into the ground, they do need to preserve a lot of water to actually flower.
Do they have a taproot?
No. So they're very shallow rooted. And they don't really like drastic differences between dry and moist. Like they kind of like the moisture to be consistent in the soil, because if you have a dry period and then all of a sudden you add a lot of water to your plant, it can actually mislead the plant and it can lead to it flowering much earlier than it's supposed to be, just because you know how rhododendrons, their buds develop like a season, two seasons before it actually flowers. So that can lead to your rhododendron prematurely flower.
And nobody likes premature flowering.
Well, especially if it happens in winter when we get frosts, because your buds and your flowers will just get frosted. So yeah, and the other myth is that you need to constantly feed your rhododendrons, which is not true. Again, if you feed them sort of, you need to stop feeding them midsummer, because if you overfeed them, again, they'll flower too early and you'll just sort of, you'll muck up the whole season.
I mean,
flowering
I can
season.
Talk on that as well. You should not feed your plants during the winter season. they are in a slower processing stage, essentially. So all that you're doing is you're increasing the nutrient content in your soil, which can be poisonous at some point, can literally cause your roots to burn.
And you're also kind of trying to wake up the plant much earlier than it's supposed to wake up on its own, you know what I mean?
Also, there are a lot of rains during the winter, so most of your nutrients are going to be going down the soil profile anyways. So yeah, don't waste your money.
Or your plant.
Or your plant. Alrighty. So, are we done with the rhododendron?
Yes.
Good. So, my other one is Dionaea muscipula.
Which is?
Venus flytrap.
Ah, okay.
In Greek mythology, Venus flytrap was named after a Greek goddess of love and beauty. Common misconception about Venus flytrap is that they can survive only on flies, well, on insects. Whereas it's definitely not true. Yes, they do like very well-drained soil, but quite moist. So yeah, it is very...
I've never seen them in well-drained soil. I mostly saw them in quite like a sphagnum mossy soil.
Sphagnum mossy, but it still needs to be like perlites.
I guess it doesn't have to be sitting in water. It has to hold the moisture, but not sitting in water. Is that what you're saying?
It needs to have moisture. It needs to be able to access air for the roots. And it needs to be poor soil. For nutrition-wise. So yeah, most of the time they're getting like nitrogen and everything from the flies.
If they can catch one. Or if you can fit it one, because that's what I used to do.
Well, if you can trick it into actually digesting one, because every time I put a fly into my fly trap, it just opens back up.
Silly plant. You're like feeding it and it just doesn't want to be fed.
Venus fly traps are carnivorous plants and are native to southern United States. They do not have significant history in mythology, as it was only discovered by Western botanists in the late 18th century. However, it has become a popular cultivar icon and is often featured in popular media such as movies, cartoons, and video games. Like, the best example probably will be Mario Kart.
I'm also thinking about, it's not quite a like a Venus flytrap, but in Hogwarts Legacy, there is a plant, I can't remember what it's called, it's, I can't remember what it's called, but it's like a plant you, when you're fighting, you can throw it out and it grows.
Something like pumpkin?
It grows. No, it's an actual like carnivorous plant. It does look kind of like a Venus flytrap. But yeah, that's quite a recent one that I found there. And I'm like, oh, that kind of looks like Venus flytrap. But obviously the plant was inspired by that, I think. Which brings me to a little sneak peek of our next episode, isn't it?
Tease it.
So... Sasha and I had an idea of talking about plants or plants that were inspired by real life plants from games, from movies, and from just like pop culture. Isn't that what we've wanted to discuss? Because Sasha is super excited to talk about Harry Potter plants and what they've been.
That will be so much fun.
Yeah.
Like, so, I have done some pre-research and it's already like mind blowing that some plants actually like real.
Yeah, I've been watching our flatmate play God of War Ragnarok on TV, and a lot of plants, they look really cool, but they look very inspired by actual plants. So yeah, I might talk about it in our next episode.
The other thing that Venus flytrap is featured in that a lot of people know but a lot of people don't, if you're a fan of musical theater, Little Shop of Horrors.
Is that the one that was recently in Christchurch here?
It was, but it's actually a Broadway show.
I'm saying is they performed here recently.
Audrey 2 is essentially a Venus flytrap.
I haven't seen that, but
I highly recommend it. It's very fun.
Okay. The one that I have on my list is ivy.
This is my next on the list as well.
Is it?
English ivy?
Yes. Okay. How about...
Hedera helix?
Yes. How about maybe I'll start...
No, just do it. And if
you have something to add on, just do that as well. Yeah. So the ivy plant, Hedera, is... Hedera is native to Europe, Asia, Northern Africa, and consists of 11 species. Can you imagine that? Oh, I hate the bloody thing, but there are like 11 of them. Anyway, it is possible that the English word ivy is distantly related to the Latin ibex, which literally means climber. And apparently it is the same name as for the goat. You know, the goats that climb mountains, which is, I found interesting. But yeah, the species name helix, which is the Hedera helix, which is English ivy, which is a major pest in New Zealand. The species name Helix means to wind or to climb around, possibly referring to the staff entwined with ivy carried by Bacchus or Dionysus in Greek mythology. I think this is very suitable for us to talk about it while we drink wine. Actually, let me have a sip. Sasha, chiching.
Kiching. What surprises me is that ivy is related to Bacchus, to wine and everything, but not the grapes.
Yeah. So Bacchus, the god of wine, revelry and fertility, was associated with ivy in Roman mythology. He's usually represented as this beautiful youth with dark eyes, golden hair, with flowing curls and ivy twining around his hidden shoulders. Bacchus is sometimes shown holding grapes, speaking of grapes.
I wonder why.
And driving a chariot drawn by panthers. I've never seen that rendition of him before. Various versions of the story of Bacchus tell how he came to be associated with ivy, which I found quite interesting. So Bacchus was the son of Jupiter, or Zeus, and the mortal Semele. When Semele asked Jupiter to appear to her in all his divinity, he did, and she was destroyed in a blaze of glory. Can you imagine that? Like, you look at someone and you're just like, poof. Yep.
That was a fluke. Sorry, guys.
So,
but yeah, also the question, is that where the word sommelier come from?
I'm not sure. Not sure. There are a few versions of how Bacchus is related to it. So Semele, who is, honestly, sorry, if I'm butchering the name, I'm sorry. I did try to Google most of them just to make sure that I'm pronouncing them correctly, but I could be wrong with this one. Anyway, the mother, who was carrying Bacchus, so apparently she disappeared, but the child didn't. So in one story, he was stitched, like sewn, literally sewn into Jupiter's leg to develop and grow. But in another story, he was thrown into a bush of ivy, and this is where he grew. So hence, he has very close relationship with ivy.
I do wonder, how did he grow in ivy? Because nothing over there is edible and can be quite rash.
Bish, it's, you know, mythology.
It's mythology, yes.
Come on.
Bish.
So I found it quite interesting, the story, because, you look at Bacchus and you always see ivy and, like, grapes around him, but I've never really thought
grapes
why.
Grapes. No, sorry, I just didn't hear what you said.
Grapes. Well, yeah, he's holding grapes. Yeah. So some common misconceptions, and I'm sure you will add to them, is when I used to work as a landscape architect at another company, I did a lot of consultations, like garden consultations. And whenever there was like a feature wall that really needed a plant on it, I'd say, oh, a nice climber would look here. And obviously people were like, oh, no, we don't want ivy. And I'm like, do you realize that ivy is not the only plant that can climb up the walls? There is also climbing hydrangea, which is quite pretty. It can be a bit woody as well, but it's much easier to control than ivy. There is also Ficus pumila, which is like the tiny leaf ficus.
Fig, something.
Yeah. It is a fig. I can't remember the common name, but it is, yeah, a fig that climbs and covers your wall.
Still quite pesky. Like it.
It is, but it doesn't. So the roots of ivy can actually destroy the brickwork, and they can sort of go in between the cracks and grow there and destroy structures, where that ficus is less invasive in that
less
term.
Less invasive, but still can leave the scars on there.
Yeah. But also, you can always just put a trellis next to your wall and train whatever climber you want, the non-self-clinging climber.
Yeah, non-clinging plants. Just use any jasmine. That's it. Enjoy.
Mm. And obviously, the other misconception is people who actually do buy it and plant it, please do not do it. It's such a massive pest in New Zealand because it just grows over everything and just doesn't allow anything else to grow. In Australia, it is illegal to sell ivy in some councils. I wish they did the same in New Zealand, especially in Auckland, because apparently in Auckland it's much more invasive than it is here. And it is a big problem here, down here on the South Island as well.
So yeah. Just like some people say, once you have a house cat, well, sorry, not house cat. Once you buy yourself an outdoor cat, every one of your neighbors has an outdoor cat.
Yeah.
Same relates to the ivy.
Yep.
I don't know people who actually happy to see ivy climbing over their fence.
No. It destroys everything on its path. Thank you.
All right. Orchids.
Ooh, I like orchids.
Of course you do. Of course you do. It's beautiful.
I've got only one orchid. No, I have two. I have like a tiny one that you've gifted me. And
I have way too many orchids.
But you went through a phase when you like collected quite a few of them, didn't you?
Yeah, I think most of them survived. Honestly, they're a little bit of a bitch to keep alive, at least for me. So Orchid appear in Greek mythology as well. Orchid was the son of the nymph Acolatia and the satyr Patilenus, whose union resulted in unbridled passion and excess. Their Ooh. Wanton son, Orcus.
That's a nice... No, I'm just confirming the name. It's actually a nice Orcus. Name. I like it. Orcus.
Presided over feasts. Their wanton son, Orcus, presided over the feast honoring Priapus, which is a god of erotic and sex and horniness, who represented the male procreative power.
That's what I wanted to say. Like, it kind of leads to it that, you know, Orcus symbolize...
Vagina.
Oh, I thought the other way around.
I don't know. I think
it symbolizes it's reproductive one of the reproductive
Somebody's organs are there.
Yep.
And Bacchus, the god of wine and revelry. At one celebration, Orcus allowed his hands to wander freely onto one of the princesses. Priestesses.
Okay, I don't know what's worse, princess or priestesses.
Such an action was sacrilegious, and the god was so enraged that they pulled his limbs from his body and tore him into small pieces. The grieving Patilenus, that's a very unfortunate name as well, transformed the remains of his son into the orchid flower. Another version of this myth indicates that the semen from Patilenus' copulations produced the Satyran orchid, the flower of satyrs.
This is like so intense, that story.
Now recalled in the genus Satyrium.
Yeah.
Grows in subtropical areas. The association with the fertility is the basis for the term Satyrius, a male abnormal and uncontrollable desire for sexual intercourse.
Well, judging by that story, I mean, he just let his hands loose and started touching everyone and everything, you know.
This is literally a very bizarre myth. It's kind of similar to...
To be honest, a lot of Greek myths are quite, like, sexual and quite...
Gory sexual.
Yeah.
Usually at the same time.
Because, like, Aphrodite, wasn't she born from someone's cut-off genitals?
Yeah, cut-off penis. Yeah.
Yeah. It was thrown into the sea and then... Was
the father of Zeus? Kronos. Kronos's penis.
So, they threw it into seawater, I think, and then the foam, it started foaming up and Aphrodite was born. Like
From a penal sea foam. Nice.
Yeah.
Misconceptions about the orchids. That is a very large topic in its own, but let's just do touch base on that.
Mm-hmm.
Watering orchids by placing the ice cubes in the roots. Watering orchids by placing ice cubes in the roots.
What is ice cubes?
Ice cubes.
Oh, ice cubes. What? Who would do that?
Because apparently it melts and it slowly releases water and orchid has time to absorb it.
Yeah, but if
which
you think...
sounds great, but also don't fucking forget it's ice.
But also, orchids are tropical plants. Like both of us lived in Singapore before and Singapore
Another
is...
Another misconception, it's not tropical plant.
Well, I mean, most of them are. They are also epiphytic plants, so they do like water to be sort of washed over their roots, not sitting there. And I do believe that plants can still get a frostbite as well.
Yes, that's the problem.
Like, I didn't even know that people do that.
I think thank you for 5 minutes, crafts.
Yep. Okay.
Another misconception is that orchids bloom only once.
As in once in a lifetime or once in a season?
Once in a lifetime, I assume, because that's why people are throwing them away after they finished blooming.
My orchid is like 4 years old now and it keeps flowering. It actually has flowers on it now. Yep.
Another misconception is that orchids only bloom once a year, which also is misconception because if you care for it, it just keeps on blooming throughout the year.
Mm.
Orchids are comfortable in soil? No, it's a misconception. They need
bark or like the special bark, don't they?
Bark, sphagnum. Mm. Just think
sphagnum?
Of sphagnum moss.
Really? It depends on the orchid, I guess, yeah.
It is epiphyte, so think of anything that grows in tropics on the tree.
Mm.
Like, they don't have much soil there.
They usually get their nutrients from the leaves, the leaf litter that gets caught in their roots as well. So in terms of fertilization, they actually don't need a lot of fertilization as well, but they do need a special fertilizer. That's what I understand. Like, no, you can't just throw your typical fertilizer for the other houseplants.
It should be a little bit more diluted than that. Another misconception is that all orchids have a scent, which
Do orchids have scent?
Yeah.
Mine doesn't.
I mean, not Phalaenopsis. Like, there are so many varieties. So, Phalaenopsis orchids don't have scent, whereas Cattleyas and Symbiums, they do.
Okay.
That's why I went through a stage of orchids at some point, because I went to one of the garden shops and I've seen orchids and they just smelled beautiful. And I'm like, yes, I have to have it.
I've never actually smelled an orchid. That's nice. Yeah. Let me know if you still have that orchid, and once it flowers, let me smell it.
It's going to take forever because I am very bad at the smelling orchids, like Cattleyas, Symbiums. They are
just taking a while to flower, is that what you're saying?
No, they are taking a while to adjust to my hands.
Okay. But now I won't be able to look at an orchid the same way as I did, because now I'm going to think about all the sexual and gruesome things that we've discussed. So yeah, welcome.
All right, keep on going.
I like the topic of orchids. Maybe we can go in depth a bit more in one of the episodes.
There is a lot of things to talk about.
Yeah, and I know you do like orchids, so we can make it a topic of its own. Okay, we can do that. I'm going to cover one last plant on my list, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can cover whatever you have
my
left.
My laptop, so I don't spill wine on it.
No, don't. Sunflowers.
I have it too.
Do you?
Greek mythology?
Yeah. I'll go, and then if you have anything to add to it, just do it. But the common sunflower, the Helianthus annus, is a large annual form of the genus of Helianthus. It is commonly grown as a crop for edible oils, but also it is used for livestock forage, bird food, and actually I don't mind eating the seeds myself.
Yeah, they're quite nice, roasted and salted.
Yeah, but the origin of the botanical name Helianthus is from the Greek word helios, the sun, and anthos, the flower, hence sunflower.
Yeah.
The name may arise from the heliotropic behavior of the plant, which causes it to orient its flower to the sun as the light moves across the sky. It is possible that Linus, who catalogued specimens sent to him from Virginia, Peru, and Mexico, gave the Latin name to the sunflower because of the general resemblance of the flower head to the rays of the sun. But then in Greek mythology, it kind of explains the first appearance of the sunflower. So a water nymph called Clytie, I think that's the way you pronounce it, please don't throw stones at me, was fancy of the sun god Apollo, whom she has seen one day on a visit to Mount Olympus. So every day she was looking for him and she pined for him as she watched him move across the sky, but her affection was unreturned because Apollo was interested in Calliope, the muse of epic poetry. So,
epic.
Yeah, so she was desperate and she didn't drink or eat food. And after 9 days, the gods took pity on her and changed her into a flower whose face would daily follow the course of the sun across the heavens. So
how
hints,
is it taking pity? Like, literally, there you go, be a flower now.
Yeah, but it also says that it probably, that myth probably talks about not a Helianthus, but like a
Heliborus?
Helitropium, which is a different plant because it does have the heliotropism, which is, you know, the follow the sunlight gene to it.
But yeah, for people who are trying to follow the myths, Roman mythology, it is Helios, where the sunflower Latin name comes from. And Roman, Greek mythology, it is Apollo, who the nymph
was
fell
in love
with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shall we also address the misogyny in the whole Greek mythology? Just like how many times women are cursed, dead, or beheaded, or turned into tree or flower?
Yeah, because of the unreturned love. Yeah. Some of the common misconceptions.
Mm.
The most common one is that a sunflower is one single flower, which is not true. The sunflower is actually a flower head with a lot of little flowers inside of it. So if you look at the sunflower, like, you know, the Russian giant sunflower, let's say, it's a big head with a lot of tiny little flowers inside that develop a seed. But also the petals that go around that kind of form that sun shape, that's actually not petals. They're also leaves. They're also flowers, actually.
The yellow petals are flowers.
Yep.
Separate flowers.
Yep.
Okay.
So the outer flowers, which resemble petals, are actually called ray flowers. Also, have you? I'm just going to show you a picture, but whoever is interested will post it on Instagram. But also, you can always Google it yourself. The sunflower, the little florets in the head of the sunflower, they are actually a perfect golden spiral. They keep sort of forming a spiral, different spirals around the center. And if you look at it, it kind of looks like rays. Yeah. It is a bit too much. Yeah. But so if you look at it.
She's just like pointing the screen at me like a cross to a vampire. Like.
Because I wanted to explain it to you, because it kind of looks like more of rays of little spirals. Mm. But actually, if you look closer, it is a golden spiral sort of unwinding from the center and going around, which I found really, really cool. But because the sunflowers have so many little flowers in the head, the sunflower is the biggest producer of seeds mathematically possible in the flower head.
Mm.
Also, fun fact, just a random fun fact. The tallest sunflower on record achieved 9.17 meters, just slightly over 30 feet.
Sorry, like for people who don't know meters and for people who can't visualize 9 meters, that is equivalent of 4 to 5 story building.
Three story building. Equivalent of a 3-story building. Yeah. And one last myth about it as well that I'm gonna burst is we actually covered it in the myth, the story that I just told you, that sunflowers follow the sun. It is true to a certain extent. So when the sunflowers are just developing and they're young, they do sort of turn their head towards the sun. But then once the flower matures, before it starts developing seeds, it actually fixes itself, usually facing east. So once it's mature, it does not follow the sun.
It's kind of heavy.
It is kind of heavy, but also like I think it will be creepy. Like imagine Russian giant sunflowers just freaking following the sun. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Looking like a freaking monitor.
All right, my plant is wisteria.
I did look into it as well, but partially. I can tell you some fun facts about it too.
In Japanese mythology, wisteria is associated with love and affection and is often used in traditional art and literature. So yeah, this is all I have about it. But what I wanted to mention about it is that it is commonly presented in Japanese art and anime as the demon detergent.
Demon deterrent.
Deterrent. Sorry, not detergent. You don't wash demons with wisteria. You deter them with it.
Hmm.
So the great example of that is a Demon Slayer, which is a beautiful anime. If anybody wants to, please check it out.
Hmm. I just wanted to add to it. I cannot remember the sides that they twist to, but one big thing to differentiate a Japanese wisteria from a Chinese wisteria, Wisteria floribunda, which is the Japanese wisteria, from Wisteria sinensis, which is the Chinese one, is one twines clockwise and the other one goes anti-clockwise. I cannot remember which one goes what way, but that's one way to differentiate it. Like if you actually look at it from top to bottom, if it, you know, goes fun. Clockwise, that's...
This is fun.
It is fun, yeah. I can't remember how I know this, but yeah, somehow I know that.
But also you can use wisteria for teas as a thing, the flowers.
I am not sure, so please don't take our word for granted.
Yeah, please check it, but I think it was a fact. But you can use Phalaenopsis flowers for tea. Phalaenopsis orchid, sorry. That's just me trying to remember what happened prior. Phalaenopsis orchids can be used for tea.
Okay, interesting. Okay, I'll actually share one more last one because I do have a big list, but I just to preserve time, I guess, I'll share just one last and you can share just a couple more because yours are a bit quicker than mine and we'll wrap it up. Foxgloves. Do you have that as well?
Similar. Do the foxglove.
So digitalis, which is the botanical name of the species, is a genus of about 20 species of herbaceous perennial shrubs and biennials, commonly called as foxgloves. So some of the really cool legends and myths that are found about it is that the genus name, the digitus, derived from a Latin word finger. So it's like a glove for the finger. So in some countries, they're actually called finger flowers instead of foxgloves. The other thing that I found quite interesting is the English name foxglove appears to be a corruption of folk's glove, like a folk as in like a fairy, a magical creature.
Oh.
Because they are smaller. They obviously have smaller hands, so they will wear the glove. So foxgloves or folk's glove.
It is cute.
It is interesting, yeah. And then also in some areas, the plant is known as fog gloves and is associated with stories that suggest flowers are the gloves worn by foxes to keep a dew of their paws. So there are different stories from different parts of the world that kind of, you know, suggest that, yes, it is the true name, but also suggest that it's not the true name. It was like a corruption of the other name. In Norwegian legends, let's say, digitalis as fox is a fox bill, Rebjola. Rebjola, I could be wrong, sorry for butchering that name. And it is believed that foxes wore them. The eerie sound of the bell would scare away the hunters who collected fox tails for good luck. Also, why the hell would you do that? Like, leave the poor foxes alone.
Well, the same reason why you would collect the bunny's legs, feet.
Yeah. And also, like in French, the plant is known as Le Gros de Notre Dame. I'm sorry if I butchered that as well. The gloves of the Virgin. So, yeah, the names are very different, right? But I kind of see, like, I kind of lean towards the folk's glove, like the small fairy gloves.
Cause yeah, that is quite cute. I would stick with that.
Yeah. I found this little nursery rhyme, which I couldn't find the origin from, but it's a little nursery rhyme that kind of sounds really cute. No dandelions tell the time, although they turn to clocks. Cat's cradle doesn't hold the cat, nor foxgloves fit the fox.
My gosh, the rhyme that came into my head, like, definitely not the nursery rhyme.
Is it sort of going back to the orchids and all that erotica stuff?
No foxgloves hold the orchids.
Yep. So some of the common misconceptions, and I guess one of the biggest misconceptions that I kind of boggles my mind a bit is that, you know, how you go to a plant shop and you can see foxgloves in the shop and people are so happily buying it. But foxgloves are actually a major pest in New Zealand. They do spread easily. For those people who don't know, they are actually highly poisonous. I can't remember if we've covered foxgloves in our...
We probably did.
Poisonous plants episode. But yeah, they are quite poisonous. And a good thing that like the cows and the cattle don't eat them on their own, but if it gets mixed into something that they do eat, they can die from it. Yeah. And yeah, as I said, it is very poisonous to like cats and dogs and cattle. So if you have pets, just don't plant it in your garden. Just don't.
Yes. Stay away from foxgloves if you want your foxgloves if you want your pets to be alive. All right. Ambrosia.
I'm thinking of like a drink, ambrosia.
Think of Xena, the warrior princess.
Yeah.
Or was it the warrior queen?
Princess.
You remember there were, like, I think it was season 3. They went for a hunt for ambrosia, and whoever eats ambrosia will become immortal and essentially will get godly powers.
Okay.
You remember Callisto?
Yep.
She ate ambrosia, and that's how she became a god.
Ah, okay. So, but is that an actual plant?
It is an actual plant.
Ah.
Mythology. In Greek mythology, ambrosia was the food of the gods and was said to provide immortality to those who consumed it. It was often depicted as a type of fruit or a nectar and was usually reserved for gods and their guests. In some stories, ambrosia was also used as a healing balm or medicine. Scientifically, ambrosia is also the name of a genus of plants, family Asteraceae, commonly known as ragweed. They are often associated with allergies as their pollen can trigger allergic reactions in some people, like me.
There is a fly stuck somewhere. If you hear buzzing in the background, we are sorry. There is a fly stuck somewhere and I can't see it. I can't really get it.
I can't hear it, so I'm fine.
Okay. But yeah, if there is a background noise, sorry about that.
But yeah, this plant is essentially associated with allergies, and I am one of people who is allergic to this bloody ambrosia, so I will never be a god.
Yeah, you do quite a decent, you do have quite a
decent
severe
list of
hay fever.
Yes. Mm. I mean, like, it's nothing like swelling or anything, but it will be easier just for me to lie down in bed with a wet cloth on my nose so I don't sneeze all the time.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Oh, no. Oh,
it's
no.
Fine. The wine went all over me.
Oh,
God.
No.
It's fine. It's an old shirt. It can go to Sally's.
What about like a bit of a salt on it, man?
It's fine.
Okay.
Maybe
just one last plant.
One last plant.
Mm-hmm.
Narcissus.
I have actually researched that as well, but take it away.
In Greek mythology, Narcissus is a famous character known for his extraordinary beauty. According to the myth, Narcissus was the son of a river god Cephisus and the nymph Liriope. As a young man, he was so beautiful.
Do you know that Liriope
is a plant?
Yeah, it is a plant, actually. Oh, okay. I did not know that. Cool.
As a young man, he was so beautiful that many fell in love with him, including the nymph Echo, which is another, like, I love that myth. Which, if you guys want to hear about Greek mythology, I would highly recommend going to Spotify and listening to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby. She has a beautiful podcast about Greek mythology. However, Narcissus was so proud and self-absorbed that he rejected all of his suitors, causing them to pine away in despair.
Guess where the word narcissism comes from?
Exactly. One day, while Narcissus was hunting in the woods, he saw his own reflection in a pool of water and fell in love with it. He became so enamored with his own image that he refused to leave the pool and eventually died there. According to the myth, flower grew where Narcissus died, and it was named after him as Narcissus flower or a daffodil.
Mm. And the story that I read, very similar story, but it said that the Cupid actually caused Narcissus to fall in love with his own image in the reflection pool. But also there is another telling where he drowned in the pool and reappeared as a flower growing along river Styx. For those people who don't know, Narcissus is also commonly known as daffodils.
Just said it.
Oh, sorry, missed that.
It's fine.
Yeah.
But yes.
What about these misconceptions of the daffodils? I can add to it if you want
to add.
Daffodils are the bulb flowers, right? So I guess a lot of people know that, but some people don't. Daffodils do not need to be lifted from the ground, just like other bulbs, like let's say tulips and stuff. You can actually leave them in the ground and they'll keep multiplying. And another misconception is you have to split your bulbs, your daffodil bulbs. Again, not true. You can actually leave them in the ground, let them multiply, be attached to each other. Like all the daughter bulbs will still be attached to each other. You'll just get a less spread out field of daffodils, but your field will be very confined and full of dense flowers and stuff. Yeah. That's it from us for this episode. Sasha, how about you say goodbye?
Well, thank you very much, guys, for listening to us. We very enjoyed talking to you today.
We very enjoy talking to each other as well and having some wine.
Yes, that's for sure. Mm. We would keep on talking, but unfortunately, we need to keep the limits in.
Okay. So many more topics to talk about.
I know. That's why we will have more topics to talk about.
But I'd say what we can do as well is we will set up a topic on Reddit, and if you guys have anything to add to it, feel free to add to it and we'll have the discussion with you there.
Or you're welcome Instagram. To DM on Instagram, or actually the better one will be the story on Instagram, so we can
tag us, yeah, but also feel free to comment under the post about this episode and we'll get in touch.
Well, that's a wrap on Two Tipsy Plants. Thanks for getting tipsy with us today and joining on our plant loving shenanigans. We hope that we have inspired you to grab a glass of wine, or two, or three, and give your leafy friends some extra love. If you would like to help our podcast, feel free to follow us so you don't miss out on our next wild and tipsy adventures. And don't forget to spread the word.
Keep it green
and keep it tipsy.
Meow, meow, meow.
Hello, Wanda.